On Long Island, we lived in a house with a dog and a cat, so I have witnessed today's parable many times over. When my dog messes up in some way, "I'm sorry" is written all over her furry face. If she's embarrassed, she doesn't make eye contact. When she's regretful but eager to connect and make amends, sometimes she leads me to the mishap, tail wagging, pointing with her nose. This is a shoe that someone chewed. This one right here on the floor in the kitchen by the table. Actually, it wasn't just anybody. I chewed the shoe. It used to be on the mat by the door, which is really close to my bed, and I got bored and lonely, and then I got nervous, and I don't know what came over me, but I picked up the shoe in my mouth and, "Oh, pet me, pet me, pet me." Sorry. My dog plays the part of the tax collector in the parable. My cat, who we gave away when we moved, is a Pharisee. Entirely self-referential, whether sprawled on the piano, perched under a warm table lamp, or standing nonchalantly beside a pillow whose stuffing is suspiciously oozing out, the cat does not make mistakes. Others do. If a thought balloon were drawn above his head, it would read, "The humans in this house raise their voices when I sharpen my claws on the telephone table, or when I sample the dog's food, or when I choose the basket of clean laundry over my litter box, or a walk outside. Phew, it's getting cold this time of year, bother. Thank God I'm not like any of them or that dog." And I'm afraid that the contemptuous demeanor of the cat sometimes brought out the Pharisee in me. But those are stories more fit for the confession booth than the pulpit, so. Jesus seems to paint a picture of opposites in this parable. But I wonder. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. 2,000 years of distance and overuse can distract us, but Jesus begins this parable as a setup for a theological joke, surprising us with the same kind of turn as a priest and a rabbi go into a cowboy bar, or a conservative and a liberal walk into Whole Foods, or my favorite, Clark Kent and Wonder Woman sit down next to each other in a hair salon. We expect the characters in Jesus' story to be from central casting, cardboard cutouts in a morality play. The religious man will be good, the morally compromised tax collector will be bad, and each will get his just desserts. But that's not how it turns out. And almost immediately, the storyteller has his listeners squirming in their seats. The community loves a Pharisee. He's a person of principle, interested more in his personal best than winning the race, a model citizen. She's the mayor who arrives early out of respect for her constituents, the policeman who applies the law to himself, the person of means who's happy to create a social safety net. On his best days, the Pharisee measures his actions by the good, not against his brother or sister. And being better or smarter or holier than thou just isn't the point. But Jesus shows us his shadow side, having him whisper under his breath, "I'm glad I'm not like other people, arms crossed, nose raised, eyes cut a little bit sideways." And what if the Pharisee becomes a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal, blindly arguing for a rule or a ritual or a right, instead of for the people the custom was designed to protect? What if the Pharisee is only going through the motions, What if he doesn't value or honor or respect the folks he's promised to serve? What if she will forsake the war to make a point and win a little battle? Being right is so delicious that most of us will submit to its poison. Taking the other role in the story can be revealing as well. Society hates the tax collector, and here he is only sorry, only crestfallen, only marginalized, standing far off in a corner by himself. He is us on our worst days, convinced that we are utterly alone, when all we can pray is, "Help me, help me." The danger, Jesus suggests, is getting stuck there too. Sure that we're powerless and unable to make good choices, shackled by the past, outmatched by our shame. Being humble is a good thing, but feeling humiliated is toxic. And at its worst, it provokes us to humiliate someone else. On some level, then, we want to run from each character. But what if we turn to them instead and see what light we can discover in their shadows? The reality is these fellows are not so different from each other. Both are successful. They've gotten there by different means, but these guys are wealthy according to the world's standards. And yet, the irony that Jesus' parable depends on is that each of them feels poor. The Pharisees' self-righteousness and the tax collector's self-loathing turn out to be cousins, both looking down at their navels instead of out to the community and to God. Deep down, I imagine each character is feeling inadequate, even bankrupt, unable to give themselves and what they have for fear that it's not enough. We can feel like that too. And maybe Jesus is telling this story to say, "All that I want is all of your heart." Even when it's self-righteous and hard-headed, broken, or shameful. "It's beautiful in there," God says. "Turn toward me and you'll find your deepest self. You may get there by looking at your shadow side, but I love every part of you." How's the old carol go? "What can I give him, poor as I am? If I were a shepherd, I would give a lamb. If I were a wise man, I would do my part. But what can I give him? My heart." Years ago, I had gathered with a group of people for a midweek service on a Wednesday noon. The sermon in that setting was a conversation, and we were wrestling honestly with the issues of wealth and poverty that the Gospel of Luke presents in chapter 18, from which the parable of the tax collector and the Pharisee is taken. One participant was tired that day and feeling frustrated, and he said something like, "We have so much here, and yet all of us are saying in one way or another, 'I don't have enough.' Lordy, if we don't have enough, then who on earth does?" A thoughtful elderly member of the congregation responded, "I know I shouldn't feel this way, but I feel poor because my body doesn't work well anymore. I took it for granted for so many years, trusting that it would always do whatever I asked it to do. And now I'm frustrated and feeling stuck physically, and that I don't have enough of what I need most of the time." Last week, she said, "I was walking through Penn Station, hobbling as I do, and my shoe came untied. A young man appeared in front of me, told me he was afraid I would fall, and before I could say anything, he had knelt at my feet and was tying my laces. 'I've got a grandmother like you back home,' he said. And as quickly as he came, he was gone." She said, "I didn't know whether to laugh or cry." As she was finishing her story, the front door of the church swung open, which was unusual, and a boy about 10 years old came skipping down the aisle. He didn't speak to us, and as if we were part of some new ritual led by this sprite, We stood in silence, instinctively, matching his reverence. He was carrying a stuffed animal, and as he came to the altar, he bowed and raised the fuzzy creature over his head. By now, his mother had followed him into the church, breathless, and she joined our circle. After the boy bowed again, his mother said, "He doesn't speak. He's autistic. Thank you." And turning to her son, she said, "It's time for us to go." The boy followed her halfway down the aisle, and then he turned and ran back to the chancel, this time going around the table. And he offered his stuffed animal at the high altar and to the figure in the stained glass window. Then he bowed to us. In leaving, his mom told us that she and her son like churches, and that they try all the doors on the North Shore of Long Island most days, just hoping that they'll find one that'll open. "Thank you for having us," she said. And they were gone. Our earlier wrestling over inner poverty and external wealth evaporated, at least for the moment. That boy presented who he was. He offered what he had, and with no consciousness of being less than or poor or not having enough, he erased the categories that we so often draw for ourselves: having, not having, black, white, weak, strong, abled, disabled, old, young, blessed, ashamed. Imagine having no consciousness of not having enough. Imagine being able to present yourself to God and to your community just as you are, with no excuses and no shame. "Lord, here I am, and with all that I am and all that I have, I honor you." Imagine not letting the world or its voices talk you into feeling inadequate or poor in any way, and knowing instead that because you are God's child, that you're rich beyond measure. For the moment, none of the Pharisees and tax collectors gathered on that Wednesday on Long Island felt poor anymore. None of us felt judgmental or self-righteous or ashamed. We were enough. We had enough, and everything seemed possible. Imagine. Amen.